It's Monday.
Yay.
I know it's not quite the same. Yeah, well, thank you, Mike, for that half-hearted yay. But that's how we feel on a Monday. But we need to attack Monday just like we look forward to Friday so that each day you have to go to work. I mean, you get to go to work. You feel okay about it because, I mean, it beats the alternative, believe me. What a weekend we've had, that's for sure. We're here to do our best to put lipstick on the weather pig, but it's still the weather pig. And what a pig it was over this weekend. And we're going to be digging into, and the governor is digging into, why in the world, with all of the money spent on all of these weather systems, there wasn't a weather alarm in the areas that needed it. And the National Weather Service continues to say, front page of the Detroit News, the great Detroit News, federal weather officials said there wasn't a tornado watch or severe thunderstorm watch in effect when that storm hit southwest Michigan with deadly force. And nobody actually says why. They say this was very, very constrained in space and time, a very small area. But as I mentioned, our governor, Gretchen Whitmer, is, or the office at least, was critical Sunday of the lack of tornado watch. So the National Weather Service exists to monitor conditions and inform Americans of severe weather in their communities. The fact that the National Weather Service did not issue a tornado watch is troubling. Well, when I read that, I thought that they meant warning, because I thought certainly a watch was put out there. But no, there wasn't even a watch.
Yeah, so they were, of course, they were covering this extensively on Local 4 this morning. And the explanation they got is that they don't like to issue watches. You know, I don't want to say the word willy-nilly, but they're hesitant to issue watches because eventually it becomes like the boy that cried wolf. But that's a watch. It's not a warning. I can understand that. I can understand that logic for warnings. But when it comes to watches, it just means that it could happen and to keep a heads up. It's one of those things. It's better to issue it and not need it than to not issue it. And we see what happened on Friday.
It's one of those heads up things we've now come to depend on. And if we don't have a heads up by even having a watch, we go about our jobs, our lives, and we don't think about it. Then all of a sudden it hits when we're totally least prepared for it. So I'm not going to pretend to have any knowledge of how they do it or how they don't do it. I am going to say we depend on that. So if they need other equipment or something, we need to get that for them. But I don't have an answer. You can stream us. You can podcast us if you missed the show, noon to 2, at WJR.com. And, of course, the WJR app is totally free, and I hope you have that. And now we also do Facebook and YouTube pages live video streaming right now. So you can tune in for that as you're getting your relentless positive radio on your way to making each and every day count, because we know each day is a gift. QTR, we don't know how much quality time remaining we have. That should affect how we approach everything. And I do thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. Horrible, horrible tornado outbreak. Worst in decades. I heard when I was getting my daily dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz, I heard one of the workers saying the biggest problem they're having right now are what we used to call rubberneckers at an accident. You know, the people going the other way in the other lane, slow down and cause other accidents because they're watching the accident across the lane.
Gawkers is another name for them, yeah.
What is it?
Gawkers.
Gawker, rubbernecker, all that. That's what we have a problem with now in this tornado area. We have people going there to see the devastation, and unfortunately, that's a bad idea right now.
Yeah, not even to help, just to watch.
They're just
with
trying to look.
Morbid curiosity.
And you know, we're telling you that the experts there who are trying to help and digging out are saying it's a problem. So please don't do it. Don't go there The television stations, as Mike just mentioned, doing a fabulous job, I'm sure, of having their cameras in place to show you anything and everything you might want to see. So please don't go looking. And we'll have more information. We'll have the congressman coming up, Wahlberg. That was in his one of his districts. And he'll have more information at the end of the show. You heard him earlier with Mike, but Kevin. Mike has him on for at the end of the show. But we'll get you information as it becomes available. You can watch the pictures on television, but please don't go to the area. It's National Nap Day. This is after the time change, no doubt.
Right.
And they said it doesn't really affect us, but I'm tired. I'm a little tired.
Sure.
I lost an hour.
Yeah. Well, and Paul, that's why we're bringing a definitive expert on today, because, we read that thing that said it doesn't affect you long term, but it does affect you short term. So we'll talk to him.
It affects you. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Doctor from Henry Ford. It's National Barbie Doll Day, debuted on this day at the American International Toy Fair in 1959. Unfortunately, so much for Barbie's efforts. Women are still making less than men, and the pay gap has increased 2 years in a row. For the first time in over 60 years, the gender pay gap has widened 2 years in a row. And now, International Women's Day was officially yesterday, but it's celebrated today also. And I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's going the wrong way. I mean, progress was being made for a while.
There's much ado from the national media. This is just another teaching moment. You know, the national media, oh, my God, gas prices, $4, surpassing $4. Oh, my God. You remember, did they do this when President Joe Biden was in office and it was over $4, March of 2022? Do you remember the media downplaying when the fuel prices went down under Trump and blowing it up when the fuel prices have gone up under Trump, still lower than they were when Joe Biden was president.
And now there's sticker wars at the gas station. You ever go fill up your gas tank and then there's, it used to be a picture of Biden pointing at the price saying, I did that. Now it's Trump pointing, saying, I did that. I don't know who's making these stickers.
I don't go to the most. I guess I don't go to the creative gas stations. I haven't seen that.
But that sticker company is having a heck of an 8 years.
They're finally profitable after all. I told you it was a good idea to do this business. So when they were saying, oh, it's up 50 cents, it's never done that. Because it was never that low before. So, yeah, there's plenty of room for it to go up. And I loved this because I dislike this guy so much. I dislike, Adam Schiff? I call him the Joker because that's
Adam
what
Schiff.
He reminds me of. He's on with Marr, and Marr says, the president can direct military force if he determines it is in the national interest. And so Marr turns to Schiff, the Joker, and says, is that reasoning too vague? And Schiff goes, oh, totally vague. That's totally vague. Then Bill Maher, he says to him, well, that's funny because that quote came from the Barack Obama administration defending the 2011 Libya intervention. I love it when they catch those morons. And let's face it, this Schiff guy is a moron. He's just the Joker, and that's that. And by the way, the U.S. presidents from both parties have used that same logic that this president's using. Obama in 2011 for the Libya intervention, George W. Bush, the Iraq War, Donald Trump in the Syria strikes, Joe Biden, the strikes against militias in Syria. Each time, the justification was largely the same: national interest and presidential authority. Sorry to burst all those bubbles of all of those people who are trying to get rid of this president. You'll have to think of a better way. But in the meantime, will you please do things that are right for your American people you're supposed to be serving? And that means let's get TSA paid again. Let's stop with the nonsense. They got rid of what's-her-name, Kristi Noem. They did what you insisted they do. Why aren't you stepping up and fixing the problem now that you've caused? I don't understand that. Anyway, Mike Parsons is here. Danielle Mason is training Abby Pelkey. Abby, get in front of the microphone. How does it feel? Is it going okay so far? Because we're still on the air as far as I know, Abby.
So far. I haven't burned the place down yet.
You haven't what?
Burned the place down yet.
No, good.
Yet.
Yes.
Like the attitude. You haven't burned the place down yet. And yet. All the other people in the Fisher Building are happy to hear that. Rich Luzinski with our WJR Traffic and Weather First. It's all right here. Relentless Positive Radio. It's Focus with me, Paul W. Smith, and the team. Stay with us. Well, of course, everybody talks about the weather. Very few people can do anything about it. And I'm not suggesting our next guest can do anything about it, but they do, generally speaking, a marvelous job of letting us know when bad weather is approaching. Something went wrong with the twisters. We're going to get into that as well as just general information. The very latest from the general manager of the Weather Channel radio network, of which WJR is a proud member. You've heard me speak with him before, and it's a pleasure and privilege to welcome you back, meteorologist Scott Larimore. Scott?
Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. You had your hands full as a general manager of one of the greatest weather services ever. And the National Weather Service has confirmed four tornadoes touched down in southwest Michigan, all this happening on Friday night. But the thing that people will talk about, and you can't blame them, you understand this, that though the Weather Service gets it right, National Weather Service, 99.99% of the time, and they've gotten so much more accurate, somehow or way or another, these tornadoes, at least in one area, caught everybody by surprise. Can you kind of help us better understand that, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way we like to do severe weather events now is we like to talk about the event a day or two before it happens, kind of jump up and down and remind people that it's coming. And then the day of, what we really like to have happen is the Storm Prediction Center come in and issue a tornado watch, right? Which means conditions are favorable. And usually that happens hours before tornadoes start to develop.
Sure, because just to remind everybody, the watch comes first. Correct. Then when all the things line up and we know it's going to happen pretty much in certain areas of the watch, it becomes a warning. I just wanted to catch people up on that.
No, and that's a very good reminder and right on the money. Exactly. And the Storm Prediction Center is a national entity. And so their meteorologists are looking out for like old zones of states, and they issue these watch boxes. Well, the local National Weather Service meteorologists are responsible for issuing the county by county warnings, the tornado warnings, the severe thunderstorm warnings. So what happened Friday afternoon is the national entity, the Storm Prediction Center, just minutes before we started a tornado there in southwest Michigan, they issued what's known as a mesoscale discussion. And so it's like an announcement to the local National Weather Service forecast offices that, hey, something's caught our eye. Something's going on here. But they did not issue a watch, you know, a tornado watch out. They felt it was too localized, too isolated an event. In fact, they mentioned that in their discussion, the Storm Prediction Center did. So just minutes before the first tornado occurred there in Cass County, there was a mesoscale discussion that the Storm Prediction Center put out. And then it was like playing catch up the rest of the day. So the cadence was kind of off. We didn't go into the day thinking that southwest Michigan would see a high-end EF3 tornado. I don't think any meteorologist was really thinking that that morning. Our focused area was more of a traditional tornado alley area on Friday.
This was the Union Lake, Union City tornado.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I got to tell you, this is fascinating, Scott, because I had no idea of the separation of responsibilities of the National Storm Prediction Center, the National Weather Service, and whoever else you mentioned in there. I had no idea that the duties to decide a weather or a watch, a tornado watch, or then somebody else decides it's a tornado warning, I had no idea those were split responsibilities.
They are split, and they have been for quite some time. And I'd have to say it's a good system. The Storm Prediction Center, their meteorologists are looking for more national signatures. Areas of responsibility include the whole country. And so they're always scanning the country to try and see where these ingredients are bubbling up and coming together that could support tornadic storms. And then sometimes the Storm Prediction Center will contact the local National Weather Service office, literally ring them up, and talk to the forecaster on duty that's responsible for issuing the local warnings county by county, and will, you know, alert them of these things. If that happened, I don't know if that happened or not. You know, there's still survey teams out that are still looking from the local National Weather Service offices to, you know, get a true picture of what all went down and exactly what time down to the minute. So that some of those are still being looked at. But it was kind of eerie just minutes before that first tornado warning came out, which, you know, killed the 12-year-old boy there. The storm prediction, so the national entity, kind of issued this discussion to kind of start to flag what they're seeing. And it was literally one cell, you know, cells that stand alone from squall lines. You know, squall lines kind of have a linear look to them. So these supercells that hit us Friday were kind of lone wolves. They were off by themselves. And it initially looked very disorganized. That EF1 initially looked very disorganized. The EF3 looked terrible on radar. It was a classic supercell that had all the earmarks of a beast, kind of a storm. And, you know, I don't know if you saw, Paul, the video of that there on the shoreline, but there were multiple vortices revolving around the main vortex, which you don't typically see in Michigan, right? You typically see that kind of stuff in Tornado Alley, like in the
Is this a harbinger of things to come? You say we don't usually see those things in Michigan. Yeah. Has something changed that now means we may see those things again in Michigan?
Well, I think this was the earliest EF3 we have on record. I'm not, you know, there's a line to be drawn. You know, clearly we don't know everything about tornadoes, and clearly I'm not suggesting that we have accurately measured the start date for every EF3 that has happened in the state of Michigan, but this was the earliest EF3 on record for Michigan, March the 6th.
Wow. Now, you mentioned, and in the Detroit News front page story, Ann Snabes and Max Reinhardt quoting from Union City, quoting the Storm Prediction Center, talking about the tornadoes were, quote, so localized that it was very difficult to detect in advance and issue a watch prior to the storm's development. That's a quote. But you did use the term too localized. What does that mean, too localized, to be able to understand it?
So generally, the Storm Prediction Center will put a watch up when they're expecting multiple tornado events over an area. They did not do that on Friday. They issued that mesoscale discussion, highlighting to the local National Weather Service offices, you know, what they were seeing. Then the local National Weather Service offices started issuing tornado warnings. You know, the Northern Indiana office started issuing there on the state line of southwestern Michigan. And so I think they issued about six different tornado warnings that afternoon. But the first one had very little, no warning on it. And then I think the Three Rivers one had about a 13-minute lead time. And then I think the most lead time was the last tornado warning of the day, which was about a 15-minute one. The Union City had more like a 10-minute warning, 10 to 12-minute warning on it. So generally, you know, when they see these tornado vortex signatures on radar, you know, local weather service will pull the trigger on issuing a tornado warning, whether or not they have ground truth or not. In this case, we were getting ground truth also.
I appreciate your help on this and always doing the excellent job you do. Meteorologist Scott Larimore, he's the general manager of the Weather Channel Radio Network. They're not the guys in charge of saying there's a tornado watch or a tornado warning, but they are the ones who help us tell you about them here on WJR, and they will continue to do so. Scott, thanks for your help.
It's my pleasure.
We continue in focus on WJR. As we continue, I always like to look at my clock when it says 1, 2, 3, 4. Because it's digital, so it's 12:34. We never had that with analog, did we? All righty. There was a college sports roundtable at the White House. You got to wonder how this president is able to squeeze in as much as he does. I guess wondering is one way to look at it. I'm wondering. But President Trump held a college sports roundtable at the White House. Turns out he's in agreement with me that that whole NIL, whatever it's called, is just ruining college sports. I don't think there's any going back, but, you know, that's what we have. Is that what Mr. Acho, the attorney and partner at Cummings, McClory, Davis, and Acho PLC, specializing in sports law, feels? Let's see. Jim Acho, welcome to Focus on WJR.
Paul W., always great to be on with the greatest voice of the great voice of the Great Lakes. Listen, I'm just grateful that after all these years, you and WJR haven't thought that I've worn out my welcome. So it's always a pleasure. And as always, I have some thoughts on this issue, and some of them align with yours. Let me start out with this. So Trump calls this roundtable at the White House. And who's there? You have these famous coaches, all of who have made tens of millions of dollars off these college athletes. Okay. Who yes. is not at that roundtable? Who is conspicuously absent? Well, athletes or anyone representing athletes. Now, Paul, ostensibly, this is supposed to be about the student athlete or athlete, right? I don't want Nick Saban and Urban Meyer deciding what legislation gets promulgated. Nonetheless, Trump is bothered by how NIL has sort of ruined college sports. He's not alone. I feel the same. I'm 55 years old. Every guy I know my age and older feels the same. But who created this problem? The college presidents and athletic directors. 7-8 years ago, when O'Bannon and Alston were coming down the pike, they saw the writing on the wall. Paul, they did nothing to get their arms around it. They did nothing to come up with a plan to compensate these kids in an equitable fashion, let them make some money off their name and likeness. Rather than do it, they left it up to the courts. So what do you have now? You have the Wild West. You have free agency. You have the NFL and the NBA 2.0, essentially. So now Trump says, well, I'm going to issue an executive order. You know, I'll probably get sued, and we may not win, but, you know, I want to go back to the old way. Well, if you know that you're going to issue an order that's going to be struck down by the courts, then it's really just performative, which is partly how he operates. I understand the sentiment. There is a way to resolve it potentially, but Trump knows it'll get struck down for what reason? Because it belongs in the purview of Congress. Well, what more dysfunctional bunch is there than Congress? And I don't care if some of your listeners are Republican, some are Democrat. I'm sure more are Republican than Democrat. But either way, I think we can all agree. Congress is a bunch of ineffective nincompoops who don't look out for any of us. Who is the one entity even more dysfunctional than Congress? The NCAA. Paul, the NCAA has never, ever cared about the well-being of athletes. Never. They are a clown show. So you can't leave it up to them. And I don't want coaches from the SEC deciding this. I was listening to some comments from a guy named Randy Levine. Randy is the president and CEO of the New York Yankees. Brilliant guy. I dealt with him briefly when I sued Major League Baseball in a class action for pensions many, many years ago. Randy is the former assistant AG under Reagan. He sits on the board of trustees of a major university. Brilliant guy. He says, and part of this is his thoughts, part of it is mine. Let the people responsible for this mess clean it up. Give the presidents and the ADs at the power conferences 2 years. Give them a 2-year antitrust exemption where you can't sue them. Let them get together and decide what is equitable to compensate these kids. Certainly, NIL is already out there, and these kids should be able to be compensated for their name and likeness. Let them come up with a plan. If you can't, then it goes to Congress. But you can't just say, well, I want to go back to the old days where the kids got a scholarship and the schools made billions. That's not fair. It's not right. It's not equitable. It's not how this country operates. It's why the lawsuit I filed and my partners filed on behalf of former Michigan football players, it's still out there. It's still a case that's very much alive. We have motions pending before Judge Berg in federal court here. That's why we filed it. It wasn't right in the 70s and 80s and 90s. It's not right now. But you also can't have what you have now. Kids playing for five colleges in 5 years, they're open to the highest bidder.
Right.
Yeah, free agency. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't even have a rooting interest in a college program anymore. So there has to be a happy medium, Paul.
All right. First of all, you're holding up the reputation of the Achos that came before you, because we had relationships with family members of yours. And I mean, that Acho is not as common a name, I think. And so the other Achos that I knew in the past, I tried to find them in my phone while we were talking. I couldn't find them. But so good for you. Number two. I hope Mike Parsons is listening, because your monologue just then, Jim Acho, was a good audition for filling in for me sometime when I have to go away to do something. So just bear that in mind. You might get a call.
That's kind of you. I don't know politics very well.
That's good, because there's nothing to know about politics except there are so many of the people that are there that should not be. And I think you already get that sense. But I'm going to ask you this. You know, when I was going to school, it happened to be at Michigan, we used to look at the athletes as having it pretty good. They had a full ride scholarship as we were struggling to pay for our tuition. Now, as it turns out, when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars the schools are making, I know that's a pittance. But for those of us who were there, we thought, that's not a bad deal, man. Get all your classes paid for, get your room and board paid for, eat fabulous meals, better than we were able to eat anywhere. And we thought it was pretty good. Obviously, it's come a long way, and they have to do something else. How would you fix it, Jim?
Okay, so two quick things. I'm not sure when you went to school. Knowing you a little bit and knowing your approximate age, my guess is you went to school there in the 70s.
I graduated in 1975 proadly from University of Michigan, Ann
Arbor. 75, 76, U of M played Indiana for the national title. I was talking to some former guys, former Michigan players yesterday about it. Here's the thing. They weren't selling jerseys in 1975. They weren't repeatedly running games in 1975. They weren't marketing these guys, their last names. I don't even know if they had last names on the jerseys back then at Michigan or any of these colleges. It's a different era. And so if you're going to make money off a kid's name, you have to compensate him.
I think that makes good sense. What am I going
to
say?
I would love to be at a round table with the ADs and presidents, because I would have some ideas of how to get your arms around it. And it would be a happy medium. First of all, I'd get rid of this craziness, this Wild West, you jumping in the portal every other year to the highest bidder. I mean, it's almost, I don't want to use the word prostitution, but it's pretty disgusting. I don't like it either. On the other hand, I didn't like when schools were putting up buildings and making money off the backs of these kids. And these kids, they get out of school. If they don't make it to the pros, a lot of them just really flounder in life. And they could have used money as a springboard, and they didn't get that. So
Well, maybe we can make that happen. But at this point, Jim, it also just underscores what we all kind of quietly knew, that these kids don't care at all about their education, or most of them. Education's got nothing to do with it. If they can go to four or five different schools in four or five different years, trust me, they're not going, oh, but then I'll have to miss that science class that I really like. That ain't happening. And maybe we need to come to Jesus on all of that, too.
How do you have a rooting interest? So I was a small college NAIA scrub player. I don't really have an allegiance to any school. But if you went to Michigan like you did, how do you have a rooting interest when year to year it's a different kid, maybe a different quarterback, plug and play for the most money?
I don't know the names. Right. Like, we used to all know the names.
Of course. You know who isn't bothered by all this? Billionaire alums. And I've come in contact with some of them, especially in the South, Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama. The billionaire alums that want to buy championships, they're not bothered by this.
Yeah.
Hell, let me get the best quarterback available. That's what's going on at Texas Tech. That's what's going on at a lot of places. They don't care about it.
James, we've got to go, but we appreciate you, and we will talk again soon.
I appreciate you.
Watch for that call from Mike Parsons.
Okay.
Jim Acho, the attorney partner at Cummings, McClory, Davis, and Acho PLC, specializing in sports law. The boys ought to get him on Sports Wrap as well, maybe get that round table going. As we continue in Focus, approaching 12:45, I got a call from my friend Kevin English, and he is so excited because he wanted to let me know his nephew Sean, who works at Henry Ford Health, had a hand in setting up this interview for us. And, you know, I love Bob Riney, have for years, the guy who runs the show over there, MJ Vogt, who helps raise money. I used to do Minds of Medicine. I got a special affinity toward Henry Ford Health. But now I'm even happy because I'm helping Kevin English celebrate his nephew, Sean, as we welcome a sleep researcher with Henry Ford Health. And that is Philip Chang, who has his PhD. Philip, welcome to Paul W. Smith in Focus. Nice to have you here.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
The health benefits or problems, if you agree there are any, how long will these effects of daylight saving time last now that we made the big switch?
Oh, boy. It can last. We would expect a couple days, maybe even three or four days. Some people adjust faster than others, so there's going to be some differences, but I would expect a few days, within a week for sure.
You know, we had a story last week, that talked about new research indicating that, oh, this is all overblown. But what's not overblown is there are more accidents and more heart attacks following the time change, period. People aren't making that up.
Absolutely.
Now, if you were to choose, because I'm all against the time change, I don't think it makes any sense anymore. Little did I know there'd be such an argument about whether we would pick daylight saving time or standard time and stick with one. Which would you stick with if it were up to you, Philip Chang?
Yeah, so the medical community is very much in favor of not just being done with the time change, but in particular, the sleep research community has consensus statements around a standard time being the one that we are in favor of.
That's what we've always heard. And we used to get that from our former news director, Dick Hafner. And so I went with standard and got bashed by all the people who play golf and do other things, have kids walking to school. So, you know, I'm not going to step back into that. But medical community still is standing by standard. All right. What can you tell us to do now that it's here to try to minimize the problems? I love the get morning sun. When I go out in the morning, I put my face up to the sun. I don't do it for as long as I should, 10 to 15 minutes, but I do that. What other things would you suggest?
Yeah, you know, our bodies actually are faced with the challenge right now is to become later, right? Because the clocks have shifted dramatically or quickly, abruptly by an hour, and our bodies need to catch up. So generally speaking, while we do recommend morning sun, I would actually say for the next couple of days, do the opposite. Try and get less light during the day, during the morning, I should say, and a little bit more light during the evening. Now, just for a few more days, and then go back to getting light in the morning, because the challenge here is for our bodies to catch up with this quick change that's an hour later, and light in the morning usually helps us stay more on the early side.
The other one, avoid bright screens before bed. We've heard that for a long time, and I did switch my phone over to night mode. Does that make a difference?
I certainly think it makes a big difference. A lot of the research also supports that, so highly encourage people to continue to do that if they haven't done that already.
I just started to try a new green tea. I kind of believe in all these things. But what I didn't count on was how long caffeine can last in your system.
Yes. People often are surprised when they learn that caffeine can stay in your system for up to 8 hours. So that means if your bedtime is 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., your cutoff time is 1 or 2 p.m.
Yeah, well, I'm not a 9 o'clock to bed guy. Even when I used to get up at 4 a.m. and my engineer, Brian Morton, would go to bed at 6 p.m. I said, if I go to bed at 6 at night, what's the point? I mean, where's my life? So anyway, I go to bed too late. So I got to cut out the caffeine earlier. And the other thing that's difficult is to stick to a routine. They always say, stick to a routine, get up at the same time on the weekend that you get up during the week. That's difficult, too.
Yes. Yeah, that is a well-known phenomenon called social jet lag. So instead of normal jet lag where you travel across time zones, social jet lag refers to on the weekends when we stay out late and we spend time with friends and family and our sleep gets later and later. It's almost as if we traveled across time zones, except we didn't. It's just our biology is drifting. Our biological clock is drifting.
And as bedtime approaches, lower the lights in your home. Avoid stimulating activities. Read a book, which I sometimes, when I'm lying in bed and can't sleep, get up and do. Take a warm shower. You can meditate, which can help signal your body to wind down. Any other quick ideas?
Yeah, I would say exactly what you said. When you are unable to sleep, to go ahead and get out of bed. With a caveat that that doesn't mean you should go and do fun or productive things like, you know, do the dishes or do laundry. You know, you don't want to accidentally reinforce that nighttime awakenings are a great time to be productive and maybe you should do more of it. So when you are unable to sleep and it happens, bad nights happen to good people, if you believe it or not. And get out of bed, find a dim, cozy place to be at, and pass the time with something that is mildly entertaining. So shows, reruns of shows. So for example, you know, Seinfeld, for those of us who grew up with Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
If it's on a television, it's generally not a problem. If it's on a laptop that's close to your eyes, that's a little bit more of a concern to try and do. If you're going to do a screen that's sort of far away like a television, or puzzles, your favorite book that you've read, something that's easy to put down when you eventually are sleepy again.
Philip Chang, who has his PhD and is an expert sleep researcher with Henry Ford Health. Thanks for your help, Philip. We appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me. Take care.
It is our pleasure. I like to watch a television show if I can see the beginning, middle, and end. I don't know why that is. And don't do what I was thinking of doing last night, which was finding a Jersey Mike's at 2 o'clock in the morning. As we continue on WJR. Hour number two on this Monday, and we're happy to be with you, happy to be anywhere, March 9th, 2026. We've got Mike Parsons, our executive producer, standing by. Danielle Mason is in the background somewhere training Abby Pelkey, and Rich Luzinski with our WJR traffic and weather first, taking care of business for us, doing a great job. And we try our best to bring you relentless positive radio. It's not always easy with everything going on while you're on your way to making each and every day count. Because you know, as do I, but we need to be reminded each day is a gift. In QTR, quality time remaining. No idea what we have. Make the most of each day. You don't have to do this. You get to do this. If you understand what I'm saying, and I know you do. Thanks for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. And that's true when you start with the morning show here on WJR and then get a daily dose of Dietz, Mike Dietz, All Talk, then me, then JR Afternoon, Ryan Armani. And then did you say something to me or were you talking to someone else? I said Mike Dietz. I'm sorry. I was looking at you on the screen.
Right.
I still can't get used to that. Kevin Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz, of course, then me, then JR Afternoon, Ryan Armani, then Mitch Albom, I better get that right, and then Sports Wrap, and then what comes on after Sports Wrap, because that's a great show in itself.
You know what? A wide variety of different
right,
programming.
Good answer, because I don't remember either. But they're all good. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on WJR. Now, former FBI agent, veteran, former chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, businessman, Republican Senate candidate, Mike Rogers, is scheduled to be with us next. So if you know Mike, I know Mike, but I'm busy doing my show, call him and say, for God's sakes, be there today.
Because I have faith.
We've tried us several times. He's just very busy, and we understand that. We do understand that. Okay, it's International Women's Day. That was yesterday, but it's celebrated today, and we had to give you the bad news that women are still making less than men. And, of course, we've been talking about the horrible tornado outbreak, worst in decades. And the biggest problem, and I heard this on Kevin Dietz as opposed to Mike Dietz's show. Mike Dietz's show just isn't as good as Kevin Dietz's show. Anyway, gee, I hope there isn't a Mike Dietz. But anyway, don't go driving over there to see the damage. That's been the biggest problem. Rubberneckers or gawkers or whatever. For God's sakes, please give these people a break that are there doing really important work.
And the other thing, I think Scott Larmore said that this was the earliest tornado outbreak. I mean, I feel like we're barely out of February here.
Yeah, this is early. And I asked him if this was a sign of things to come. He doesn't know. Obviously, nobody knows.
Right.
What I do know, and I'll ask Congresswoman Debbie Dingell about this, enough already. They got rid of what's-her-name, Kristi Noem. Let's get rid of this government shutdown because it's hitting spring break travel. There's hours-long TSA lines, and enough is enough. This is just wrong. It's also especially wrong when we're at war, at, call it what you will, at a conflict where the folks from Iran might be striking back with the sleeper cells that their president, our president too, but their Democrat, Joe Biden, led into this country. It was the whole idea of why it made no sense for them to just not have any borders. There's a lot of whining, and I don't blame you because I got to go out and fill up the car too about the gas prices. But just please remember this, the gas prices, can you imagine? They're almost as high as when Joe Biden was president.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't like it.
The news media hasn't done a thing about that. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't like it no matter who's in office.
Yeah, neither do I. We do know, we touched on this, but Governor Whitmer's office is calling for a probe into why the Weather Service didn't issue a tornado watch. We've had a couple of explanations. We will look forward to her probe and see what it all. I mean, we 4 dead, 12 hurt in these tornadoes in southwest Michigan. That's overwhelming. And I think we all thought we had the technology in place to never have something like this happen. So we'll see what goes on. National Weather Service tried to, as they confirmed, 4 tornadoes in southwest Michigan. They've tried to tell us, you know, what happened. And it's a little too technical for me to just look at and say, yeah, okay, so that's what happened. This is an old line. Russia is providing Iran intelligence to target U.S. forces. The president said he didn't see that.
Yeah. I mean, that's predictable. You kind of had a feeling anyone who's going against the United States, Russia will be there to stick a finger in the eye at the very least.
There was some kind of, attempted terror case in New York City. And is this the same story they're talking about that somebody attacked Gracie Mansion?
Yeah, but they threw something outside of Mamdani's place. An IED was found.
And the terrible news is it was made with some substances or products that are hard to come by. So these aren't a couple of teenage kids building something in their garage.
Well, and hopefully that makes it easier to trace.
I hope it makes it easier to trace. I fear they're going to find out that there's a country behind this. And if it isn't Iran, then it's really going to be a problem because that's an act of war.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll find out.
And then we'll have to go after them as well while we're already fighting all these other battles here.
I can't help myself. I check to see what's going on my Instagram account, Paul W. Smitsta. And I appreciate people following me and checking it. And I try to put up some pithy, witty things from time to time. But I did see, because it, I don't know if this was, What's the thing with the squiggly lines, the newest way for us to waste time on social media? Where, by the way, it's given a lot of people who wish they had a talk show, they think they're on a talk show now when they're on that, what's it called?
The little thing with squiggly, not TikTok. Are you thinking of TikTok?
No. TikTok's been around a long time. There's something new that's out there. Anyway, whatever it is, I see a woman saying, doesn't anyone in the Trump administration or people that were there at the dignified transfer have the, she did not say intestinal fortitude, she used something else, have the guts to tell the president he should remove his hat during the transfer of the six U.S. soldiers killed in the war with Iran. Did that bother anybody else? I saw it. I didn't think about it. I mean, you know, the generals and other people have hats on.
Yeah, but. I mean, I was always under the impression civilians were to remove their headgear or whatever they're wearing on their hats, unless you are in the military or first responder.
And he is. I mean, he's the commander-in-chief, but I guess that's what he was thinking, or maybe he wasn't thinking. I don't know. TSA lines stretch for hours, shutdown hit Springfield. Okay, we know that. We talked about it. Anything else other than obviously the tornadoes that we've talked a lot about already? Crews continue repairs in Farmington Hills as Novi residents picked up water.
Yeah, there are
public works.
Bunch of water main breaks. That huge one out in Novi you just mentioned, I think. They've got it repaired, but they still have to test it for at least 48 hours. There's another one that broke either last night or early on today over Jefferson near downtown, which is weird. Normally,
that was a big one, yeah.
Yeah, normally you think of it getting suddenly cold. We get all these water mains, not suddenly warm.
By the way, we haven't talked about it, and you know I'm a proud graduate of the University of Michigan, and you know this radio station, and I am proud to be the voice of MSU. We were the voice of Michigan, and we've gone back and forth over the decades, but we are the voice of MSU. So in that respect, our team lost. But I have to tell you, I think this makes for what is a fabulous rivalry in that last year, Michigan State beat Michigan both times they met. Is that correct? I think that's correct. And this year, Michigan beat Michigan State both times they met. So it's at this moment, and after years and years and years of Michigan State dominating, Michigan and Michigan State are well balanced in terms of having a real rivalry. Does that make any sense, what I just said?
Yeah. In order for it to be a rivalry, both teams have to take turns being superior and winning.
And my friend Tom Izzo just made sure that this will go on forever when he was quoted as saying, we're nobody's damn little brother. Now.
Right. Which I'm surprised Izzo commented on. I guess what happened, the crowd at the Michigan Chrysler Arena were chanting little brother, little brother. And I think in years past, Izzo would have ignored it, but he's not ignoring it anymore.
Well, it would go away if it were ignored. And now it's not going to go away, and he's going to hear it all the time, I'm afraid. But anyway, that's the rivalry. The other thing is that Fears guy or whatever.
Another low blow back kick.
Learn to not kick guys in the testicles.
Right.
I mean, that's
in the
not
intestinal
a hard
fortitude.
Thing to learn. Yeah. I mean, but coach got a little upset saying, well, because he did it, now they're looking for it. Well, who could miss it? The guy makes a most unusual move to raise his leg to kick the guy in the groin. I mean, you couldn't miss that. It's not because he is already known for doing it. It's because he did it again.
Right. Less than a month. I think it was early February he did it against someone on Minnesota. He did it. He did it here. It's like,
there's nothing subtle about kicking a guy in the balls.
Okay. You mean the intestinal fortitude?
I mean, yeah, that's not intestinal fortitude, if you ask me. But
no,
anyway.
He kicked him in the intestinal fortitude.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess that's probably a better way to put it. In the old days, that's how I would have said it. But, you know, these are not the old days, and I can prove it every day. As we continue in Focus, Paul W. here on WJR. Well, God bless Ann Thomas as our program director, doing the same thing she did when she was my executive producer. She reminded me, of course, we know Mike Dietz, Kevin's brother, because he's helped us before. Mike Dietz, who I referred to, I could have gone through this without you even telling me, Mike, that I made the mistake. As I was looking at Mike Parsons, I said, Mike Dietz. He said, no, it's Kevin. I said, oh, whoever Mike Dietz is, I meant Kevin, or whatever I said. But my point is, there is a Mike Dietz. He's Kevin's brother. And he's the president and founder of Dietz Sports and Entertainment. And he is a great guy, an all-around great guy. All right. Speaking of all-around great guys, we are going to welcome Mike Rogers, veteran, former FBI agent, former chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, businessman, and most importantly right now, Republican Senate candidate. In fact, if you want to get more information about him, I have so many papers that I've been standing by here. It's rogersforsenate.com. That's a pretty easy way to find him, rogersforsenate.com. And I have not had a chance to speak with him since the war or the airstrikes on Iran began. Mike, it is always a pleasure. I'm glad that we caught up with you. I know how busy you are.
Oh, Paul W., it's always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Give me your take on what's going on with Iran right now, because we're catching up with you.
Yeah, just first of all, a level set. This is what I think people maybe got lost in the whole discussion, you know. And again, sometimes policy decisions are not political decisions, and I hope people – I don't know, in this environment, we can never get there. But in between 2023 and 2025, the Iranians themselves and through their proxies attacked U.S. interests over 200 times, including taking the lives of U.S. service personnel. A lot of people didn't realize that. And between 2022 and 2024, the threats on commercial traffic, including oil and fertilizer, went up dramatically, and the through the Straits of Hormuz, and they did that through their proxy, the Houthis, which jacked up the prices for commercial products going through there, and they dropped about 2 million barrels per day that would go through there. All of that impacts the United States. So when the negotiators, President Trump's negotiators, showed up and said, okay, we're going to work this out, this has got to end, and we're not letting you get a nuclear weapon, the Iranians' response was, guess what, we have enough enriched uranium for 11 nuclear bombs. They thought they were proud of that, and I think that was the trigger that said, hey, we cannot allow this to continue. And talking about it and talking about it over seven presidents trying to contain, Republicans and Democrats, by the way, trying to figure out a way to contain these folks wasn't working, and they were getting more embrazened. So I think trying to degrade their ability to threaten the Straits of Hormuz, to cause problems across the Middle East, which impacts us, and the commercial traffic that was getting held up going through the Straits of Hormuz was definitely related to U.S. interests, and the fact that they had these new ballistic missiles they were working on that had longer range and were threatening to use them against U.S. Installations. I just think it all came to a head, and we said we're either going to continue this charade of negotiation for another 10 years and pay this price, or we're going to do something about it. And so this, I completely agree with degrading their ability to do that. Their air defense systems, their missile systems, their nuclear program all needs to be degraded. Their Navy, which they would threaten about every 2 months, they were going to mine the Straits of Hormuz and shut down world oil markets. And so all of that you need to take away from them. They are not, they are dangerous folks. And when they tipped 30,000 people of slaughtering their own citizens to maintain control and told the United States, go jump in the lake, we're going to get a nuclear weapon and nothing you can do about it. Well, I think that all came to a head. And this to me is the best chance we're going to have for peace and stability across the Middle East. You have to take out the main sponsor of terror, and I think that's exactly what's happening today.
It's been astonishing to me that women, especially from the squad, the AOCs, et cetera, America, of course, is what I call her, have not stood up to stand for the women of Iran, who for the first time in 47 years have an opportunity to actually be treated like human beings again, and yet you don't hear a word about that from these guys. Apparently, we're going to have to take out the second son of the Ayatollah because he's said to be a hardline figure with close ties to the powerful Revolutionary Guard. So where do you see this ending? Do you see it ending at all?
Well, I do see it ending. I think here's the best minimum success, taking out their ability, basically defanging Iran from doing terrorist activities, sponsoring their proxies, having the ability to develop a nuclear weapon. That's the best outcome, or the best minimum outcome. If they get a regime change that wants to open up the West and allow women to come out of hiding and participate in society, that's a phenomenal day for the world, certainly for the Middle East, and certainly for America. I really wish people would get away from the political posturing on this and look at the policy and the positive implications of not having the most destabilizing force in the Middle East who's threatening to get and use a nuclear weapon. I just don't understand why we can't all be for that.
I can't understand it either. Since last we spoke, you've gotten many endorsements, including the Southeast Michigan Chamber of Commerce. Congratulations on that. You have started kind of an affordability message across the great state of Michigan with your series, Let's Get to Work. And you've got ideas on unlocking home ownership for the next generation. All of that can be found at rogersforsenate.com. Rogersforsenate.com. One last word, Mike.
Well, listen, we can do this. Michigan's been having the same two ideas in this, the U.S. Senate for 32 years. It's time for a change. Let's get somebody who's focused on Michigan. We'll get up off our knees. We'll get our kids reading again. We're going to build things again. We're going to get defense industrial base contracts back again. I am really bullish on the future of Michigan. Let's get your listeners bullish, too, by going to rogersforsenate.com, and let's get this thing done, and let's get back to work.
Mike Rogers, Republican Senate candidate, after all these great things he has done for us and for the U.S., I support him on this one as well. Best to you, best to Christie, and we'll look forward to our next conversation.
Sounds great, Paul. Thank you so much, and best to Kim.
We continue in Focus on WJR. Great day for our friend Bud Denker and our friend Roger Penske, because as we speak, they are unveiling, IndyCar is unveiling the race course in D.C. that you heard about first on this program. It was Bud Denker's dream, and it is coming true for America's 250th birthday. So I'm just seeing bits and pieces of it. Well, now I'm seeing Putin, which is a sad switch from Bud Denker and Roger Penske. They have nothing in common. But anyway, the IndyCar unveiling its race course in D.C., which I'm sure makes our next guest happy, too. U.S. Congresswoman of Michigan's 6th District, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. Congresswoman Dingell, always a pleasure, ma'am.
Paul W., it is always a pleasure to talk to you. And I want to tell you, Bud Denker and Roger worked very, very, very hard on bringing that race to Washington. So it is a win for them, and I congratulate them.
Well done. I do, too. And we had Bud on talking about how many meetings, how many presentations.
Oh, he had more than 300 or 400 meetings. And, it gets complicated. I want you to know, I said to Akeem, Democrat, I will deliver the Democratic votes to make this happen. But, they're very sensitive to corporate logos, et cetera, around the Capitol. And anyway, he made it happen. It was his commitment to, and I said to people, it's been very successful in Detroit. They can do this. It gets more complicated with security issues, so I do not want to downplay them. But those Bud Denker worked his heart and his soul out to make this happen. And I hope this is a great way to celebrate the 250th.
I think it's one of many, but I think it's an especially important one for the Motor City. And so we're all in on that. Now, you said you could get your Democrats. You could deliver your Democrats. Can you deliver your Democrats for me as a special favor to say, okay, they got rid of Kristi Noem. It's time to vote on funding for the Homeland Security, especially since your people in Michigan are suffering. FEMA is under the DHS umbrella, FEMA. We need FEMA to be working. We've had tornadoes. We had a 12-year-old boy die. We've had others die and be hurt terribly by this. We got rid of, they got rid of Kristi Noem. Why can't we now gather together and get this fixed?
So, Paul W., I'm going to hit you in a very different way on this. We need to, and we have put out proposals, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But FEMA was destroyed a year ago by DOGE. They were gutted. They have not been working for a year. The people that up north experienced the storm a year ago have not gotten what they needed. It's not been delivered to them. And I think that FEMA is a very important organization in this country, and it is DOGE that gutted them and Elon Musk. So I want to be really clear on that. I worry. I want FEMA to be strong. I'm not sure that anything we do with the Department of Homeland Security will restore what was gutted a year ago, but it should be. And I hope you'll join me in saying to this president, FEMA matters. But
I have to say to this president, and I have to say to you, Congresswoman, that so does TSA. And right now,
well,
TSA is not being paid, and we've got spring.
TSA guys are and women. I love them. I talk to them every week. They're hurting. I introduced legislation last summer that would pay them and never let them be ping pong ball in the middle of all this. I offered an amendment when we were doing the rule last in November to pay them. I went to Rosa DeLauro, and we have a bill that would pay everybody but ICE so that they wouldn't be caught in the middle of this and the Republicans won't talk about it. I do worry about TSA, and I'm going to say that to you point blank. There are people that are still suffering from the last shutdown. They can't pay for gasoline to be able to get to their job. They can't pay for the daycare for their children that they need while they're at the job. I want to thank Chad Newton and the people at the airport for making sure that they eat during the day. We tried to do some things for them at the last shutdown, and they were told that they couldn't take meals, free meals, from members of Congress or other charities. We wanted to start a food bank. And yes, this administration that can take a plane from the UAE would not let them take food from a food bank because that would be a gift. So I don't like what's happening to them. I care very deeply about them. I'm talking to them on a regular basis, and we need to do it. But I'm also going to say, and I'm trying every way I can, but I'm also going to tell you, now, I know Mark Wayne, and I served on a committee with him, and I think he would not let a Minnesota happen and what we saw. But we do need guidelines for ICE. They should not be able to arrest people without judicial warrants. They should be wearing cameras. They should not be able to arrest and detain American citizens. They need guidelines. I could go through a whole list of things, Paul W., that need to be done. And changing Kristi Noem, you know, hopefully Mark Wayne will see. I mean, anything's an improvement over Kristi. And, you know, I know Mark Wayne. He has done, we did some things together. I know he's mega, and we'll see, but I don't think that he would believe that a shooting of two Americans would be called domestic terrorism, and I don't think he'd go on television and call that within 60 seconds. But he needs to get in there and get some guidelines for what they can and cannot do, and we don't have them yet.
Well, you've unloaded a lot there. I agree with you, Chris.
Yeah, because I care like you do.
Yeah. Kristi Noem was way out of her element. I never knew of her, and it seems hard to believe that she was a successful governor. I forgot that until they fired her, and I said, wow, she was governor? I mean, she just didn't look like she had the ability to get advice from people and understand what was good advice and bad advice. As I said at the time, the only thing she should have said, or the president, or the vice president, or anybody else involved, was whenever we have a shooting, there's an investigation. And until that investigation is completed, I'm not going to comment on what took place. Because just like you, I don't know for sure what happened. But instead, she came out
agree with that.
she came out guns blazing and looked like an idiot. But then we have to remember, somebody said to her when she was writing her book, no, no, they're not going to take you seriously. And I think it's because they would have said, because you're very attractive and they won't take you seriously. So show them you mean business by shooting your dog. How could anyone take that advice and not understand how that would blow up in your face? And that's the way she's going to be remembered, was that she shot her dog.
And then I, remembered and bragged about it, bragged about it.
I later learned that she shot a goat that same day. I don't know if that was in the book because I'll never read the book. But I'm saying she did not have the ability to understand what was good advice and bad advice. So she shouldn't have been in that position. Meanwhile, International Women's Day, where are the squad? Where's AOC, America Off Course? Where are those people? Why aren't they standing up for the fact that for the first time in 47 years, women might actually be able to be treated like human beings if we're successful in Iran?
I think that people are worried about what is the plan for Iran. We're asking a lot of questions and not seeing the answers to it. Paul W. I've talked to so many people who have so many different feelings. Iran, you know, we have many of the imams here are from there. When you hear about what's happening in the ground, on the ground in Iran, I think we don't have well thought out plans. Last night, the press secretary for the president said he won't take off the table drafting young men and women to have to go on the ground. I want to know what the plans are. And I do believe the Congress is the only one that is authorized to declare another war. I do not want to see another endless war in the Mideast where our young men and women's lives are at risk.
So you believe that if we say that the president can direct military force if he determines it is in the national interest to be faulty?
I'm not sure what you just said to me.
The president can direct military force if he determines it is in the national interest. Do you find that too vague or what?
But he can only do it for 60 days without going to the Congress. When we had our classified briefing, which we're not supposed to talk about, there were a lot of questions there weren't answers to. You know, what is our goal? What is our mission? The person that's going to replace the Ayatollah is equally as bad. What were his plans? Who was
maybe
he
worse.
Try to replace? Yeah, I'm afraid he may be worse. Is right,
I
and that's not
that
going to help
will,
women
I
either.
Suspect he will be dead within the next couple of weeks. That's my guess.
I'm just going to say I was listening to you, and I often think you're, how do I say this without getting in trouble? I wouldn't want to be him right now. And I think that's true. I want women to be free, but we got to have a plan. And I don't want that plan to be drafting young Americans and putting them back in another endless war. And, you know, I'm talking to the ambassadors of all the countries in the Mideast. They're concerned about a lot of issues. I want permanent peace, not World War III.
Well, none of us want that. And by the way, that statement, the president can direct military force if he determines it is in the national interest, was actually said by the Barack Obama people in 2011 for the Libya invasion.
You said some words after that, by the way, about
But the same logic has been used by President Obama, President Bush, President Trump, and President Joe Biden. Each time the justification was largely the same, national interest and presidential authority. We got to get through this. I would rather we get through this together as Americans. And whenever our boys and girls are in harm's way, we don't argue whether they should be there or not because they are there. And they need our full 100% support as Americans.
That we do need to do them, but we are not drafting people right now for another endless war. And that's what I'm worried about, too. So let's see where this goes. We need more information. None of us are happy. I don't think any of us are happy by what the developments yesterday. So.
All right. We also need to get FEMA back up and running. We need to
DHS to get funded. We do need FEMA back and running.
We need TSA to be up and running.
Zero. I love my TSA guys. I love them and the women. I'll do anything for them. But we are ground
then
zero
get them
for
a budget
how
so
FEMA
they can get paid
for a year. I'm working on it. I've introduced bills right and left.
Okay. I know you have. All right. Congresswoman, always a pleasure.
And I don't stop. The one thing I do is don't stop.
I understand. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, U.S. Congresswoman of Michigan 6th District, and my dear lifelong friend. Well, almost lifelong.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All righty. We continue in focus on WJR. We're going to squeeze in our next guest. He deserves a lot more time than we have, but we wanted to get him on, given the turmoil, the weather trouble starting Friday, and some of the tornadoes in his district, 5th District, and that is Congressman Tim Walberg. Congressman, always a pleasure. Nice to have you on board. Sorry it's about this conversation about what has happened and what is now going on and the investigation about no tornado watch issued or sirens near the to warn the folks, for example, at Union Lake.
Well, Paul W., thanks for having us on. And those are concerns. But as we find out more and more about it, really most everything that was done was normal. It was supposed to. It works that way. You had a wonderful exposition on what a tornado watch, what's required for that, with the weather broadcaster
Scott Larimore. Yeah.
And he did a great job in really delineating what went on, talking with my sheriffs and emergency managers this morning over in Cass County and by that sad sight of loss of a 12-year-old in Eddiesburg. It seems like the systems did work. Some of the things that are being stated about reductions in funding for the Weather Service, that's absolutely false. In fact, there's been increased dollars put in for the Weather Service operations. So this was one of those things, as you know, Paul W., as well, us old geezers know a lot, that life happens, and sometimes it happens in a bad way. And now we find out some of the best people in the world, which are our neighbors and friends, family members, show up to help, to pick up the loss and the needs and meet people's needs. And we're seeing that all over my district, from Edwardsburg, where I was at this morning, and last night I was at Union City and Union Lake, where it looked like a bomb had gone off, and met one gentleman who lost his wife there at the lake in the tornado. And yet the people are showing up. Our sheriffs, our emergency managers, state police are doing yeoman effort. I've been in contact with FEMA multiple times since Friday afternoon. Kristi Noem, who I guess is still Secretary of Homeland Security, called me Friday night, offered all the services that FEMA can legally do and are capable of doing for us. We're going to see what happens on that. We hope, I hope this wakes up my colleagues, and the next time we vote, like last Thursday when we voted to fund Homeland Security, that they'll vote with us this time.
I can't believe they could again vote against it. Seeing what this is doing with FEMA, with our Homeland Security at a time when we need it more than ever, and for that matter, TSA not being paid, those poor, hardworking men and women, and how that's causing trouble. And the Democrats have got to understand this is all falling on them. Even if the institutional media won't blame them, won't point out the truths, they don't point out the truths about gas. Oh, my gosh, gas prices might go as high as they were when Biden was president. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. They never gave credit to the president when gas prices went down. And then they said, well, they went up 50 cents this week. That's the most they've ever gone up. That's because they were the lowest prices they've been in years. It's just, it gets to be maddening as an observer. And I fear my listeners. No, my listeners understand. My listeners are very bright, the best and brightest audience in all of radio. But there are a lot of people who don't get it and then shoot from the lip and say this president's doing everything wrong. He's not doing everything right. But he's certainly not doing everything wrong.
Well, that's absolutely true. And in situations that we're seeing ourselves now in my district with these tornadoes, and hopefully we're not going to have another round of them tomorrow, which there is some concern. And I would tell any of my constituents that are listeners to you, if they're listening right now, make sure that you listen to all the warnings, you prepare yourself for this, so we don't have hopefully what took place the other day. It is what happens, and you can't control the weather at times, so control how you respond to it. Also, I would quickly, and people can go to my website, walberg.house.gov, and get further information, but there's all sorts of issues and needs that are out there, but we also know you ought to talk to the right entity before you show up. They're working hard to get things opened up again, and we need less traffic than what has been out there. But
we don't need rubberneckers, gawkers. We don't need people going out there just to see the damage. They're getting in the way. Did you say walberg.house.gov?
Walberg.house.gov is my official site, and that has all the updates on it, phone numbers that can be called, entities that are working in the area. And I think we also point out that there are scams that are out there, people that are coming in and having a homeowner make a down payment on tree removal, and then they don't show up again, or putting a new roof on, and then they don't show up again, but the homeowner is out thousands of dollars. So go to the locals. Go to local entities, get the information from them, and you'll be far better off and safer from hitting a scam. So we've got both extremes. We've got wonderful people stepping up and volunteering, and we've got fraudsters that are out there too. So,
and they should be prosecuted to the nth degree. Quickly, Congressman Tim Walberg, with what you know right now, you're not looking at some big hole or mistake made by the National Weather Service with what you know now.
With what we know right now, no. This was a very, very localized storm, and that when you put a tornado warning, it is in a much larger regional area. This wasn't that. The warnings that did go off, the sirens that did go off, that were supposed to, did go off, except in one spot in our county or in our district, over in the far west side, and we're checking out why that was the case, but the rest did. But it just was a boom. It happened almost as soon as there was an evidence that there was one coming, and people weren't able to get away fast enough. And thankfully, again, we've lost four lives. We've had about 20 injuries. Three, as I understand, they were hospitalized, but it could have been so much worse. What I saw there at the lake yesterday, my gracious.
If you could give us a quick, I hate to cut you short, but a 30-second prayer for the day, Congressman Walberg.
God, thank you for being you. Thank you that you care for us, and you've demonstrated in so many ways. Thank you that you're there for heartbroken people right now. Meet their needs, give them comfort, and encourage people like ourselves to continue serving. And with that, I think we'll get through this and be stronger for it. God bless America. God bless the 5th District. And God bless these people here now. It's in the name of Jesus I pray. Amen.
God bless you, Congressman Tim Walberg. Stand by for news and JR Afternoon with the only, one and only, Ryan Ermoli. Stay here.